What most people think of freedom is doing what you want. We have what we call the American spirit, the independent cowboy, who, you know, wants open land, open pastures, far away from anyone who might have a problem with, you know, what a person's doing.
So you're saying that's
it's not freedom? It.
Well, I'm here today with my friend John Immel.
Hi, Carl.
And it's always great to have John on here. John is a graduate of Harvard. It's always a blessing to have you on here. You always stretch my brain a bit. And today we're going to be talking about freedom. And so, John, I've already talked about freedom a few times, but why do you want to talk about freedom today?
Well, there are several reasons. One, because I think that people so often misconceive freedom or don't quite get it. And yet, at the same time, we all have this inkling that freedom is really important.
Yeah.
Right? So, this is something that's important to get right, so we don't misuse our freedom, and actually that we attain the goal or purpose of our freedom.
There are tons of people running around America claiming to be for freedom, claiming somebody violated their freedom, holding up the American flag, saying that I am for freedom, but we are arguing about all things all the time. We don't seem to actually know what freedom is. And so that's why I've been exploring this topic, well, also because it's such a central topic of the scriptures, that Jesus, initiated his ministry saying, I'm here to set the captives free. An entire book of the Bible is set aside to the story of a people coming out of slavery into freedom, and it's just like the heart cry of people everywhere to be free. So maybe we should spend more time understanding what it is that we're so passionate about.
Freedom can have an addictive sort of quality too, just because it's so desirable. And again, in the sense of like, it is so desirable, so we can focus on it. If it's directed wrongly, it has a lot of power over us.
Let's start then maybe with what is freedom? How would you define freedom?
Yeah, actually, I think that it's easier to understand or approach the conversation by understanding what it isn't, and then contrasting that with what it is. Basically, what most people think of freedom is doing what you want. Like, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. You can't tell me not to do it. So I'm a free person. I have rights under the U.S. Constitution. Get off my back.
Right.
That's the idea of freedom. And that manifests in many ways, I think, especially in our culture. We have what we call the American spirit, the independent cowboy, who, wants open land, open pastures, far away from anyone who might, have a problem with, what a person's doing. Mm-hmm. And so somebody far away from anyone who might complain and put any pressure on you.
Or any restraint. They don't want taxes. They don't want a border on my property. I don't want anybody telling me I can't dig that well or whatever.
Exactly. And so I think that our forefathers correctly identified freedom as really core to a healthy society. And so that's deeply ingrained in us as a culture.
So you're saying that's
it's
not
it. Okay. That's not it. That's not what our forefathers had in mind when they wrote the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights and all those things. That's not what they had in mind. In fact, they said that we have the right to pursue happiness. And I think that in the Declaration of Independence points to a sort of crack in the idea of doing what we want, because it is for happiness. We have to first understand that freedom is not a goal in itself, but it's for something else. It is our freedom to have something. What is that something? It's happiness, mm-hmm. right? And so we can want all kinds of things that bring us misery. And if we want those things, we are not truly free. Mm-hmm. In fact, we are slaves then to a kind of disordered desire. So that gets at a little closer to what freedom actually is, which is an unhindered ability to make happy choices, not an unhindered ability to make any choice.
So in order to do that, you have to define, you have to know what makes you happy.
You have to know what makes you happy. And that answer is, you know, never whatever my whims are right now.
But does anybody know what makes them happy? It seems that people that I talk to all the time, I mean, in doing deliverance ministry, you're basically helping people untangle themselves mm-hmm. from the messes that they got in trying to be happy.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's true that we can't fully comprehend our own happiness, but we can identify it. There's a difference, right? I can know, you know, that beautiful woman over there, Natalie, my wife, you know, that I want her. But that doesn't mean I comprehend her fully. Doesn't mean I know every single thing about her. But I can
or
identify
even what makes
her
beautiful. You don't really fully know what makes her beautiful.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so I've not yet unlocked all the secrets mm-hmm. of my wife. But at the same time, I can know that I want her as my wife. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, we can identify what makes us happy, but we can't fully comprehend it because the thing which fulfills our whole nature is vast. Mm.
So you may know what's happy for you, but how do you know what would make me happy?
Yeah, I think that
because when you're talking about freedom for a nation, you're talking about making laws and making all sorts of decisions that affect other people, which is maybe why everyone's running around saying you're inhibiting my freedom.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, the subject of what makes us happy is a big topic. Mm-hmm. And it's an important topic because you can't really understand freedom until you understand happiness. Mm-hmm. So that is a big topic. But I would say that we share a common human nature. And so on some level, we also share a common fulfillment. That what fulfills our human nature on some very, very basic level has some commonality to it. And then you could say, oh, well, what about my individualism? My individualistic desires are ones that I would say are lower than ultimate happiness. That they are maybe means, or like I might be called to be a mathematician and a computer scientist, and you might be called to something else, a certain ministry or whatever God calls you to. But that it's not that thing, your calling, that ultimately fulfills, but it may be where you pour most of your energies in trying to get to that thing we call happiness. Again, it's a big topic. Mm-hmm. It's a big topic. I think you know we should.
Do you know somebody who does a talk on that?
Yeah, I think we can do a whole talk on that because it is important. But there is something common because we're all human to our fulfillment, and in particular, our human fulfillment. Given that we have a hungry rational mind. If you understand that, then we can get at what is common to our fulfillment.
Most of us feel like our happiness and our freedom, which we probably really kind of use interchangeably without thinking about it, but that our happiness and our freedom is limited by somebody else, that someone is inhibiting my freedom, and so I need to get them out of my way.
That's the knee-jerk reaction, right? Because it's always harder to look at ourselves than it is to look at others and place the blame somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But there are, I would say, three categories of things that impede our freedom. And one you've already mentioned, is the tyranny of others. The others violating our freedom or mm-hmm. getting in the way. Other people's competing for finite resources that we would like to have for ourselves.
Right.
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 So that is, of course, always the first go-to of you know, of our egotistical nature, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But there are other things which can impede our freedom, and the second one is simple defects in our body or mind, right? Like I could have a defective arm that limits my freedom, mm-hmm. and people love to blame that part too, mm-hmm. because they don't have choice over that, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, oh, my arm is the cause of my unhappiness, mm-hmm. or some other defect. It's really God's fault that I'm not free because he made me this way.
Right.
And, you know,
so I'm not free to be in the NBA. I mean, that's just not.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not free for that.
And I'm not free to be a Major League Baseball player.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So that kind of brings us to the third hindrance of our freedom, which is our desires. Hmm. And this is the one that I think is most troubling, when we have something we want and that we're very excited about, but we know is not good for us, yet we are powerless to stop ourselves from following that desire. Mm-hmm. And this is very troubling, because it's a really a personal prison. I mean, mm-hmm. anything that hinders our freedom is kind of like a jail cell. But the worst jail cell of all is the one you put yourself in, mm-hmm. through your own choices. Mm-hmm. And so you see in most of the spiritual traditions of the world that the masters of those traditions are specifically trying to liberate themselves from slavery mm-hmm. to disordered desires. Mm-hmm. And some of those traditions say, I want to get rid of all desire altogether. I think that there's some problems with that, mm-hmm. But because I think desires are there to help us. They're good. They're life-giving. Desire to eat is certainly a life-giving desire. I don't want to eliminate it, but I don't want to have an uncontrollable desire to eat,
yeah.
or an uncontrollable lust for sexuality, or an uncontrollable, you know, hunger for money or mm-hmm. or power or any of the, you know, the intensely life-giving, wonderful gifts that this earth has to offer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because on the one hand, you could say, like maybe a young person coming of age, mm-hmm. I'm free to drink, but mm-hmm. are you then free to stop drinking?
Yeah, exactly.
So these are things that impede our freedom, mm-hmm. but what is it? What is freedom? What are we actually? Is there a thing? Is freedom an illusion?
Freedom is. If we're talking about a formal definition, it's the ability to fulfill one's nature without hindrance through acts which are oneself is the source. Okay, that's a kind of complicated definition, but if we spend a minute on each of them, the freedom to fulfill my nature. If I have the license to drink, the legal ability to drink, but I drink myself into oblivion, I'm not fulfilling my nature, right? Mm. So we see already that freedom is not arbitrary license to do whatever I want, but it is only the unhindered ability to do those things which fulfill my nature. And then the next part of that definition, without hindrance, right? That it's not that I have this intense desire to drink and manage to suppress it. That is less free than the person who is like, can easily take a few sips of wine and put the drink down and walk away, mm. right? That's a person who might be able to enjoy the gifts of the fruits of the vine, mm. and at the same time not be oppressed by that desire. Mm-hmm. And so that is what we mean by without hindrance. That the desires aren't so disordered, or that the tyranny isn't so bad, or that the defect in the body isn't so terrible that it makes it difficult for us to fulfill our nature. Mm-hmm. Okay? And then the third part about that is through acts which oneself is the source. And that is precisely, like, it's not my mom that is going to make, do the things that would make me happy, but I am the one who needs freedom from an alcohol addiction or a sex addiction or a power addiction. I am the one who exercises that freedom to make the happy choice.
Mm-hmm. Right? So, yeah, and in order to do that, I mean, like, to fulfill my nature, we have to answer the question, what is my nature?
Yes.
And what is my actual nature? That is, you know, as Christians, that's why we're always pointing back to the scriptures, because the scriptures are presenting an answer to that question.
Yes.
Like, that's the major, the main point of it, is to say, this is what you are, this is where you are, this is what you're called to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why, you were saying before when we were talking that freedom is close to the heart of God. I think it is, you know, very powerful to recognize, as you did, that, you know, freedom is everywhere in the Bible, because it is the essential gift of the Bible, that it gives us that freedom to choose what actually makes us happy. It says what our human nature is, what we are made for, and gives us the tools we need to declare freedom.
And it's why the American experiment worked so successfully at the beginning, because it was both a philosophical experiment tied with a very strong Christian tradition and culture and revivals that took place, where it really held those two together. Where saying, with really the American idea of freedom has been the Christian idea of freedom.
It has been a Christian.
And that's the only reason it had any. It got any traction at all.
Yeah, the secularization of our culture is ultimately a forgetting of what makes us happy. Now, I don't mean that to say, yes, I do believe our Christian faith gives us the answer to what makes us happy. I firmly believe that. But the secularization of society is an even deeper problem than having the wrong religion. It is or having the wrong faith. It is not having a faith at all means that the person has not yet identified anything in this world or beyond it that makes them happy. So they're not tethered to anything. They have not yet, in a sense, at the center of their lives is a confusion because they don't know what makes them happy. And so they cannot, if you don't have an idea of what fulfills your nature, you are not free. Mm-hmm. You can't pursue anything freely. You're just a scattered person.
As we have secularized the corruption level in the country has increased, and I've been thinking about this so much because the rule of law in this country in the past 5 years or so especially have just has just been smashed to pieces, where you go to court, if you go to court today, you have no idea what kind of result you're going to get.
And the
importance of it is, just like in driving, we have red lights and green lights, and those are to protect us, but they're limiting things because we've concluded that happiness would be not wrecking.
If you go through a red light, you are not increasing your freedom. In fact, you're inviting those defects of the body that will hinder your freedom.
Right.
It is a greater freedom to obey that traffic law than it is to ignore it, simply because of the longevity, a life. It's a life-giving law, and that we need to remember, that freedom is not the ability to make any choice. It's the ability to make the happy choice. It is a freedom from arbitrariness, as well as a freedom from hindrance. Both of those are important to recognize. And that our human experience, from C.S. Lewis, is that we are a cauldron of competing desires. That our inner landscape is one of, like, right now I want to eat a chocolate cake, I want to talk to my friend Carl, I want to, you know, smooch my wife. I can tell you 100 things that would be very desirable right now. And so there's a cauldron of instincts and desires that are all competing.
And conflicting, for the person. Even that. And like, conflicting. I want to eat chocolate and a lot of it, and I want to be really fit and be able to run a marathon and whatever else.
Yeah. I want to be wealthy, but I don't want to work hard, or, you know, whatever it is, whatever those conflicting desires are, they're a real problem. And freedom is the ability to suspend. This is another definition of freedom. Freedom is the ability to suspend choice, to allow time for reason, to discern what would actually make us happy. I think the most important thing is to develop an intuition around freedom, and starting by what it isn't, because it's a lot harder to talk about what it is. And again, that discussion of what it is the subject of happiness, a whole nother talk. So I think that it's good for us to have a basic understanding of what counterfeit freedom is and how to interpret that. And so one thing which I think one misconception of freedom, I would say, is characterized by the song, Who Let the Dogs Out? And the idea is that that by expressing our instincts, by expressing our passions, we have greater vitality. In some senses, that's true, because we experience our bodies more palpably in that mode. So, you know, the dogs, they don't have inhibition. You know, they fight, they, you know, they do all the stuff that dogs do, and they're not inhibited, or there's no internal conflict in an animal the way that you would have in a human being, precisely because humans are free and dogs are more like robots. But in any sense, there's a misconception that to express the passions is to be a free person. And that was a whole, we should understand that as a whole socio-political movement from the late 1870s through World War II. And it started with Nietzsche's idea of the Uberman, which is this man who expresses his will and is like a macho, I'm going to go do this and no one's going to stop me kind of mentality. And obviously that World War II brought an end to that, because it was a kind of crescendo where, and this, by the way, is called primacy of will, right? Mm. The idea of primacy of will over reason. And the idea is, I'm going to express my desires. I'm going to express my machismo. That was the whole philosophy of the Nazi Party and Adolf Hitler. And so people were disgusted at the end of World War II with that kind of mentality. And the pendulum swung in the opposite direction. And now we're seeing the extreme of the other side, where like any male who expresses his will is a toxic male and toxic masculinity and all that. But it's important to see that this idea behind the song of Who Let the Dogs Out was a whole socio-political movement from the 1870s through the end of World War II.
They didn't describe it that way.
They didn't. No, they did, actually. No, really? Yeah, oh, think wow. about Teddy Roosevelt, Speak Softly and Carry a Big Stick. Mm. And it was very much public policy of nations. And it led to, unfortunately, World War II. And once, you know, tens of millions of people were dead, they were like, yeah, maybe just being willful and expressing our desires and instincts is not ultimate happiness. Just maybe, right? And so then the pendulum swung in the opposite direction. Now we've got a deficiency of some of that. And you're seeing people like Andrew Tate trying to get young men to adopt primacy of will, which is, you know, express your desires, be a willful person, and
assert yourself. So that's like a new kind of freedom, and that I'm free to assert myself.
Yeah,
at your expense.
Exactly. And there always needs to be a balance between the appetites and reason. One thing that we have to remember, and this whole idea of expressing the passions is expressing vitality, is what the origin of that word passion comes from. Passion is a derivative of the word passive. And when we say a person is passionate, what that originally meant is that their reason had become passive to the person's appetites. Mm-hmm.
So they stopped thinking and they just started acting.
Yes, exactly. So there is a passivity there. And it's a passivity of the reason. We can have passivity of the will, not a great thing. But you can also have passivity of the reason, which means desires are ruling the house. Mm-hmm. And that is spiritual enslavement, ultimately, because you're acting from your animal nature instead of your free human gift.
In counseling people, in deliverance sessions and stuff, sometimes I have to encourage them to get angry because they've, in a way, it's because they're so angry, they pretend that they kind of block it off altogether.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's part of, I think, freedom to be able to, when it's appropriate, to get angry and then say, why am I angry? And then deal with the root of what made you angry rather than just acting out in anger. And, you know, trying to pursue this question of what makes you happy, or what is my nature, ties into what Jesus said about the essence of freedom. He said, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. That we're trying to get to that real essence of our nature. And, you know, when I'm angry, why am I angry? What right do I have to be angry?
Yeah.
Or do I have a right to be angry?
God gave us the passions because they're life-giving. Mm-hmm. So it's not like an escape from the world, escape from the body. Mm-hmm. It's not a rejection of our physicality or our body at all.
Mm-hmm.
It is just a proper ordering of our body so that we are not a bland person in any way, shape, or form. We invite the passions, but they do not make decisions for us.
Yeah. So again and again, we come to the conclusion that you cannot have freedom without truth.
Yeah.
You cannot have freedom, without true Christian faith, which I know this sounds terrible to people. Like it just rubs against the American culture, but ironically, because that is actually, our John Jay, the first chief justice, said that, I can't quote it exactly, but he basically was saying our judges need to be Christians in order to do this right.
Yeah, well, the fact is our world is created in a certain way, and it is created by something. And is that thing that we worship as Christians and acknowledge? It's not, the cat god. It's not the elephant god. It's not, we all recognize that those are not the whole gift that we've been given.
Who is actually living in freedom? Are Americans living in freedom? Is somebody in another country, are they living in freedom? Are you living in
freedom? True freedom is having God. That is what freedom is. True freedom ultimately is that we have what is most real and what is most life-giving. Now, again, I'm speaking, if you'll forgive me, so in philosophical terms here. When I am using this word God, I'm not referring to what the Bible reveals God to be, but simply what the great I am, right?
In other words, Moses
said his name was, the great I am.
Right.
Yeah.
In other words, whatever you determine is what's going to make you happy is your God.
Yes, that is the first step. The first step is to identify something that is your ultimate happiness, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you start on that journey today to identifying what your ultimate happiness is, you will come eventually to understand that the great I am is our happiness. What is the source of this reality is what we deeply desire, and that is what is common to our human nature.
Yeah, so this idea of freedom, of being a free country, if you go to Nepal, you will feel like you're free if you honor the gods of Nepal, right? Like if you play by the rules of the god that they worship. If you go to China and you worship the god of China, you can make money. You can live comfortably in China if you're loyal to Chairman Mao. You'll feel free.
But it's not as big of a freedom as the great I am.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
But what I'm saying is that that is their great I am.
That is their best attempt to identify that.
Right.
And it is a faulty a faulty conceptualization, but it's better than nothing. It's better than secularization, because a secular people have not yet made any claim to what their happiness might be.
But the truth is that they're the secular secular society is just a vacuum, and like what we have today is that if you don't wave a certain colored flag, you know, or promote a certain lifestyle, your freedom will be limited.
Your freedom will be limited.
But if you give the offering of praise to that lifestyle or whatever, then you will be granted your freedom again.
Yeah.
And then
a small freedom. It's trading a bigger freedom for a littler freedom. But yes, you will feel that you can navigate this society without hindrance.
Right. And, but for those of us who... you know, there's an inner conflict there. We're saying, but that's not free. I'm not free to disagree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
ultimately, our freedom to identify what that happiness is core to our freedoms. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, given the nature of a mind, what is a mind made for? It is made for the truth. So until it has the whole truth, it is always going to be unsatisfied. And that whole truth is, again, what is the great I am? What is most life-giving? What is most real? That is what the mind desires.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bible, when you read it, you come to realize that it has the answer to what the great I am is.
Mm-hmm.
But if the first step is choosing something, the second step is realizing that any God that you find worthy of worship is going to be the source of all reality, right? Mm-hmm. What does it mean? And another, I said that I would try to make this intuitive. And I'm going to say that we all know that the object of our freedom is to have life, have the most life that we can have, to have life abundantly,
mm-hmm.
right? That is what we mean when we say the pursuit of happiness is to have life abundantly.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to have life abundantly, we need to navigate all of reality perfectly. Otherwise, if we are in opposition to what is real, we are banging our heads against the wall. Mm-hmm. It's a self-destructive act.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, and so many of our desires are self-destructive desires.
Mm-hmm. And another, the language the Bible puts on a self-destructive desire is the wages of sin is death.
The wages of sin is death. Mm-hmm. Yes. One of my favorite quotes from about freedom from Saint Tertullian is, and I'll read it because it's just so beautiful. Saint Tertullian gives us this quote, "Prayers only art is to call back the souls of the dead from the very journey to death, to exorcise the possessed, to open prison cells, to free the innocent from their chains."
Mm-hmm.
And what does he mean by that? Why is it that prayer calls back the souls of the dead from the journey to death? And if we understand what freedom is, we know, and what we've been talking about here today, we know that the object of our freedom is happiness itself.
Mm-hmm.
It is what is most real, what is most life-giving, the great I am. And when we pray, and not just any kind of prayer, but specifically prayers of praise, what we are doing is we are taking the disordered desires of this heart and we are turning it towards that thing which we know our happiness to be.
Yeah.
And so all prayer, and especially a prayer of praise, is a declaration of war against slavery. Mm-hmm. And it is a reclamation of our freedom because it turns the heart towards the object of true worship, which is human fulfillment, God himself.
And that call to praise is expressed in the book of Acts when it says that if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart that God raised Jesus from the dead, you will be saved. Mm-hmm. It's that confession that of like, this is who God is, this is who I am, and this is the truth. This is where I fit. And, you know, it may seem audacious to somebody watching or listening today to say, like, that we could say, well, the Bible is truth. Well, any, you know, the people say the Quran is truth, or whatever their holy book is the truth. But truth has a certain ring to it, and it's like the key that actually turns the tumblers. As a Christian, we can't be afraid to preach. I think we're so afraid to preach in this culture because someone will say we're preachy, or someone will say, well, that's your truth. Or they'll get mad at us because we're saying that what they're doing is wrong. And so, I mean, I think my whole life, you know, I'm 40 years old now, and my whole life I've had that sense from our culture that, like, how dare you tell somebody else how to live? But the reason we have to do it is because only the truth will set you free. Only being able to answer this question of what is my nature?
Yeah.
What will make me happy? And if we have that answer, the only way to set other people free is to share it.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes from St. Augustine is that the ignorant see the good as just another rival, right? So before we come to recognize what is good, you know, we have a sea of choices before us. And the confused person who has no idea of what is good sees all of those choices as rivals. You know, if you tell me to do this one, who are you to tell me to do this one? I want to do that one over there. And so in our state of ignorance, and I don't, and I include myself in this, there are goods, even goods that I know are good, that I cannot do yet. That I have not found the inner strength yet to do those goods. I'm, you know, a fallen person. I'm not pointing to the just the other here. The most distressing thing about ignorance is that we have a smorgasbord of choices, and the good choice looks just like another rival that is oppressing us until we come to see it for what it is. And that is why whenever we are preaching, and we're preaching to someone who does not yet see this. So to them, it is just another rival that is trying to oppress them.
Trying to steal their happiness.
Trying to steal their happiness. And this, to talk about the intuitive side of freedom, is again the very idea that I want to escape all rules comes from the confusion of a person who has not yet found any rule that benefits them.
Because any rule worth keeping.
Any rule worth keeping. As soon as they find some rule worth keeping, they are going to cling to it for dear life.
You mentioned being great.
Yeah.
About that.
The second that a person desires to become great at anything is the moment when they leave their subjective little world where it's all about me and what I want to do and enter into the other. Go beyond themselves to reach for something outside of themselves. So let's take a person who wants to become a great guitar player or great on the piano. Anyone who wants to become great on the piano is not just going to be like, oh, I feel like pressing this key and that key and this key over there. The first thing they're going to do is study how the piano works. They're going to study great composers and great musicians that they can get inspiration from outside of themselves. And suddenly, in their study of that instrument, they're going to be adopting all kinds of rules and measures and structures that may seem silly to the person who isn't a piano player, who doesn't have that desire. But if you want to be a great architect, you're not just going to start by putting random stones on each other and call it a building. You are going to study the rules of architecture and the historical, you know, expressions of architecture and draw inspiration from that. And then you will be able to express your individuality because you know the rules.
Yeah. So you can be somebody inside of a definition. So
yeah.
In other words, you can't, there's no such thing as art until there's a boundary. You know, even in the most abstract art, my father-in-law got in trouble one time because he was at some kind of museum and he found this string, fishing string that went from the floor to the ceiling. And he touched it, and a security guard came to him, had to inform him that that was art. but even in the most abstract thing where someone's trying to be free, to break the rules, they have to say, this is art and this isn't. You can't touch this, And that's how it gets its definition. Still didn't make it good art, but at least it gave it the definition of art. But for us, for freedom, we have to have definition. We have to have the courage to commit to something, to truth. And it's why that we, as Christians, are called to holiness. And it's why we're called to preach holiness. And as you were saying about praise, the most important thing to do when you wake up, the greatest message, the greatest preaching we'll ever do is our own praise. And we praise by the way we live and by the words that come out of our mouths, the things that we put our money into, the things that we decorate our house with, the things that we put forward as being important and valuable are the things that
I remember as a teenager feeling very silly singing songs of praise. I remember, you know, just, you know, that like, what am I doing? What, you know, but ultimately anyone who wants to be free is going to recognize that praise is the essential act of a free person. Then this is, yeah, as you just mentioned, this is why it is so important to start every single day with praise, because praise is that claim that that is my happiness. I am turning to that. I am converting all of these disordered desires and surrendering them to that thing which makes me happy. Prayer is the essential act. Praise is the essential act of the free person.
And it's an incredible act of courage. One that we're called to make, a step that we're called to make. And the truth is that if you don't make it, it will be made for you. You know, the default, our undefined gods are gods nonetheless. And the wages that they pay is still death. So the call today is for freedom. For you to walk in freedom, we are as we pursue the truth, the more that we walk in it, then the more free we are. And so, John, thank you today for sharing. Never welcome, disappointing.
Carl. Great to be here.
Yeah. I hope you'll be free to join us again next time.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if you caught. It said free to join us next
time. Oh, free. Oh, yeah, I didn't catch that.